Welcome to Cookbook Club. We are home cooks from Portland, Oregon. Every month, we choose a cookbook, make lots of recipes from it, and then we get together to share some of the dishes we made. We talk about what worked, what didn't, and decide whether this is a cookbook we can't live without.
I'm Sarah Gray.
And I'm Renee Wilkinson. This week, we're talking about Modern Comfort Food by Ina Garten.
Ina Garten is an American chef, cookbook author, and television personality. Perhaps best known as the Barefoot Contessa from the Food Network, Garten has written 13 cookbooks. Modern Comfort Food was published in 2020 and was a New York Times bestseller and won a handful of awards.
It's pretty wild how we got to season three without talking about Ina Garten, but here we are.
Here we are.
Did you ever watch her show?
No.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I never had cable at the right times to be like into the Food Network. I feel like even when I had it, like in college, I feel like they included cable in the dorms or something, but like I was too busy and I was never into the Food Network. Like I have never seen almost any of those cooking shows.
Okay.
Yeah. How about you?
Yeah, I watched it. It was kind of what I wish the Food Network still was.
Okay.
Yeah. Where people actually like make recipes.
Yeah.
And now it's really like they sort of assemble things.
And it's all about like competition shows, right?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, we're not watching it.
We're not watching it either.
When I jumped ship, it was because it was turning into like competition shows on who could make like the grossest sandwich, basically. Like, you know, this like, is
I
it.
Don't want to watch
are we
this
cooking
anymore.
Or are we just
yeah.
putting a lot of cheese on things and assembling it together? Yeah, she's great, though. She's such a funny personality.
Okay, yeah.
People joke like, Ina, it's Thanksgiving. Like, should we have wine or cocktails? And she'll be like, oh, both. You know, like, she just has this like sassy, like, I am who I am.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
And a very like classy, you know, Hamptons.
Yeah.
Sort of feeling about everything.
Okay, that's fun. I like it. Just from the vibe of her cookbooks, she reminds me of my Aunt Jenny, who I've talked about before on the podcast, who is like a great cook and cooks a lot of food that's sort of like Ina Garten's food, decadent and wonderful and like very entertaining focused. And so I think of her as like sort of like the brunette version of my Aunt Jenny.
Is Aunt Jenny blonde?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Have I met Aunt Jenny?
No, she lives in Texas.
Okay.
Hi, Aunt Jenny. Yeah, she's wonderful. And I haven't actually talked to Aunt Jenny about Ina Garten, but I feel like we could have a conversation about that. I'm sure she's like into the Barefoot Contessa.
Well, now she listens to the podcast. You have had that conversation
yes.
with her.
Yes. Let's regroup on that later.
Well, I also really admire how Ina Garten fawns over her husband, Jeffrey.
Yeah.
And it's like such a consistent theme I remember from her show, too. But yeah. then also in her book. And then like I follow her on Instagram and in her Instagram content. And so that feels like very real to me, which yeah. I appreciate yeah. because I feel like, you know, Ina Garten made her cooking empire pre social media and all mm-hmm. of that smoke and mirrors crap.
Yeah.
And she's like the real deal.
Yeah.
You know, she like makes fancy food because she's a fancy lady.
Yeah.
And she entertains, like makes recipes for entertaining because that's what she does.
Yeah.
That's, I think, how she got her start too yeah. with Barefoot Contessa. Yeah. I think it was like a restaurant, but was her background also in catering and
catering,
private
yeah.
events?
Yeah, exactly. So it's definitely very like entertaining focused to me. But one thing that I found really interesting is that in this book, she shouts out a lot of like her team. Like she's got a whole team. And her team is quite young. There's pictures of all of them. And I think that's kind of cool that she seems to be like, you know, she like kind of built this whole empire and she's an older lady and she's like got all these like younger food people sort of under her wings and maybe sort of leading her to this modern place.
Well, I like that she pulls back the curtain and shows us who the team is.
Right.
I guess that's what I mean by the smoke and mirrors and her being the real deal. She's like, I'm Ina Garten. Like, I don't have time to do all of this.
Right.
Like, of course I have a staff, you know,
right.
and like they're in
yeah.
the photos of
yeah.
her cookbook. And like,
that's
so
cool.
rarely, you never see that.
Yeah.
You maybe see one photo at the back of the cookbook that's like, by the way, here's the five people who like helped this
right.
write this cookbook.
Right.
But they're very hands-on in the photos. And of yeah. course that makes sense. Like if you built an empire, it can't all be on one person.
Right.
And if it looks like that, that person's probably not being very transparent.
Right. Right. Totally. Yeah. I like the honesty of that a lot. So it's modern comfort food. And we've talked a little bit about this before. She's sort of putting a modern spin on some sort of classic recipes. And I know you have some thoughts about that.
Oh, I always have thoughts about everything, you guys. It felt very like arbitrary to me.
Okay.
It felt kind of like she's taking the recipes that she loves. She knows what the people want. You know, she's
yeah.
like, if you're going to be making classic, you know, quote, American cuisine, like Eurocentric American cuisine, give the people what they want. and like, let's go through those classic recipes that she knows works and like make the most minor tweaks to them.
Yeah.
To call them modern.
Yeah. Sure.
I'm not saying that's like a bad thing. These right. recipes are still great. It's Ina Garten, but
right.
it's not like new.
Right.
I didn't come across a lot in here that was new, or if it felt new, it was because it was like trying a little too hard to be new.
Right. Definitely. Like, for instance, she's got a grilled cheese and she tells you to put mango chutney on it.
Uh-huh.
And I think the mango chutney was like the modern spin on the recipe.
And I could see how that would be good.
Yeah, it was fine.
But yeah. I think it's sometimes it's sort of almost like dipping a toe into like, we're going to make it modern with this slightly ethnic ingredient.
Sure.
You know, like, sure. let's use mango chutney.
Yeah.
Let's not use like fig jam.
Right.
Which I'm not, again, saying is a
right.
bad thing necessarily, but I just feel like I could very much see what they were doing yeah. when they were putting the recipes yeah. together.
Exactly. Exactly.
Like, is this new?
For sure.
Also, a lot of it is extremely like dairy heavy.
Yes.
You know, there's like lots of butter and lots of cream.
It is just heavy, period.
Yeah. Lots of cheese. I mean, yeah. comfort food, I don't actually think has to be heavy. I think yeah. some people would be like, well, it's comfort food, of course.
Right.
And it's like, well, I mean, it's a certain type of comfort food.
Right.
It's like right. watching the Super Bowl and, you know, yeah. eating at fill in the blank, like chain restaurant
right.
comfort food. But there's a whole other well of like comfort food in this country that
right.
isn't necessarily cheese laden.
Definitely. That's definitely true.
I'm being kind of a downer and
it's okay.
I do like this book. I can feel like all of the listeners listening who like love Ina Garten yeah. just being like, so
like Renee, come on.
I know. Like, yeah. stop it, Renee. Like, she's great. I agree. She is great.
I think she's wonderful. Let's talk about some of the recipes that we've made from this book.
Yeah.
Let's start with some appetizers.
Sure.
So our friend Eliz made us some appetizers at our cookbook club gathering. She made the warm spinach and artichoke dip, a classic,
mm-hmm.
and she made the ultimate Bloody Marys.
Both of which were fabulous.
They were wonderful.
And yeah. I can use the word fabulous extra times in this episode
yes.
because I feel
Please
like
do.
Ina uses the word
it's
fabulous.
It's very on theme.
It's fabulous.
So the warm spinach and artichoke dip was just sort of the classic that you know and love.
Yeah.
There wasn't any modern spin on it, but it was delicious.
I don't think Eliz changed the warm spinach and artichoke dip at all. I think she made it as written, right? So it
yes.
had like cream cheese,
yes.
some mayo,
sour
butter,
cream.
Parmesan.
Artichoke hearts.
Yeah. Everything yeah. that you want, you know.
It's a classic warm spinach and artichoke dip.
Which is one of my favorite things,
yeah.
I have to say. Like,
it's delicious.
I don't eat it really anymore because there are recipes out there probably to make it non-dairy, but I just kind of don't like doing that. I don't
yeah.
like, oh, I really love mac and cheese. Let's make it dairy-free. It's
yeah.
like, just make something
just
different.
Find something different.
Yeah, yeah, find a different pasta
There's
dish.
There's a zillion options.
Yeah, but that was delicious. I would yeah. eat that anytime.
That was very good.
The ultimate Bloody Marys.
I loved those.
So good.
Yeah.
And what I love that Eliz did is that she didn't put the booze in it.
Yeah.
Because like not everybody yeah. in our cookbook club
right.
drinks.
I don't drink, but I love a Bloody Mary. Bloody Marys are one of the things I miss about drinking, actually. So she made my night by bringing me a non-alcoholic Bloody Mary. And it's sort of all about the garnish.
Yeah.
So she's got like a jumbo prawn on there, you know, a green olive, a lime. I love the garnish on a Bloody Mary.
You know,
it's basically a salad.
It felt kind of like if you were throwing a Great Gatsby party or if you're throwing like a fancy pants party, like we just had like the Oscars and the whatever other Academy Award things. Those are different, right? The Academy Awards and the Oscars.
I don't know.
And the Grammys is for music.
And
like Oscars is for movies. Academy Awards is for TV shows.
I think the Emmys are for TV shows. I think the Academy Awards might be the Oscars.
Okay. You guys see how much I'm tuned in.
But it also might be a different thing.
Anyways, all of those award shows, if you were throwing like a viewing party, like you should have this Bloody Mary there. It looked so decadent
yeah.
when she served it because there was that humongous like prawn just like
yeah.
hanging off the side of the glass.
And you salt the rims with Old Bay,
yes.
which was really smart.
And there's clam juice in the mixture, too,
yeah.
which none of us could necessarily detect.
Right.
But I also wonder if like
probably added like a nice brininess
yeah,
to it.
It probably mm-hmm. would have been problematic if we could detect it too much, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah, totally. I thought it was a great mix. It was not too spicy, but it was like spicy enough.
Mm-hmm. Why don't you tell me about some of the other lighter things that you made from this book?
Yeah. So I don't know that there are any light things in this book. However, one of the things that I found that I feel like is a real gem that's kind of hidden in this book is that there's something called a green salad vinaigrette. So it's not even really a salad recipe. It's sort of just a dressing recipe because she just tells you to like dress a simple green salad with it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a simple vinaigrette. But you know what it has?
What?
It has one egg yolk whisked into it.
Oh.
Which makes it super creamy. So it's like this wonderfully decadent, creamy vinaigrette. I thought it was wonderful. I was like, this is a revelation. This is amazing to just throw an egg yolk in there.
Uh-huh.
So I love that. And I'm going to keep that trick in my back pocket. Because you could do that to any vinaigrette. Just add an egg yolk.
That sounds
great.
It gets
like very creamy. And then, you know, you get like, you can even use like a more bitter lettuce. Because have that creaminess, I feel like it really offsets the flavor.
Like you could use some radicchio or something that's like bitter and
exactly.
tough.
Exactly.
That sounds delicious. I love it when you find something from a cookbook, like a little thread of a recipe that you can actually just use in
just
a bunch of other
elsewhere.
Things.
Exactly. Yeah. Like I don't need that recipe, but that was a really good takeaway.
One of the things that we had at our cookbook club that would go well with the salad is the creamy tomato bisque
That's right.
soup,
yeah.
which is the cover girl photo mm-hmm. too. Monica made that for cookbook club, but then you also made it on your own.
Yeah. And she also sort of made it twice because she made it once with cream in it and once with coconut cream in it. So she made like a vegan version or a non-dairy version. Mm-hmm. And she did not blend it because it doesn't call to blend it. But I like my tomato bisque creamy. So I did blend mine when I made it. And I thought I thought they were all great, honestly. Yeah. I mean, it's just a classic tomato soup. So it's not anything out of the ordinary, but it's a good like go-to recipe for that.
Yeah. The straight recipe I looked at and it was also like butter, lots of milk, lots of cream.
It's so very dairy heavy. Yeah.
yeah. So of course it's going to be delicious.
Yes. I did serve that with the cheddar and chutney grilled cheese, which I told my family I was making and they all said, no, thank you.
Oh.
So they just had regular grilled cheese. She does call for a sharp cheddar. So I made theirs with sharp cheddar on a homemade sourdough bread. And I was the only one who ate the chutney on mine.
Okay. Yeah, it just feels kind of obvious. Yeah. Like, I mean,
yeah.
Have we not discovered that yet?
Right,
like
right.
So many restaurants and cafes have doing that. And
sure. It wasn't my favorite. I almost would have preferred it without the chutney.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I like the chutney, but I don't like it with sharp cheddar. I like a different kind of like harder cheese or something in there that would like melt a little bit, like a Gruyere maybe.
Yeah. Sure.
I feel like the wine shop by my house does sandwiches like that, and it's really great.
Yeah, but that was a good, like, easy dinner.
Well, you made another soup from this book. Tell me how that went.
I made this split pea soup with crispy kielbasa. So you know what? Split pea soup, my husband loves split pea soup, so that's something I make fairly frequently. Most of the recipes that I have call for, like, a ham hock or some kind of ham in the soup, which I think is great. This one doesn't, so it doesn't have any meat in the soup, but then you cook up kielbasa, like cut into coins basically, until it gets like really crispy, and then you put it on the top of the soup.
Okay.
So the meat is like not in it, it's on it.
How did the actual soup itself taste?
It's fine. It was good.
I feel like that it would have tasted better with the ham
really
hock.
Helps. Yeah.
yeah.
So you kind of got that meaty thing, but it was because it was separate, like the flavors didn't meld. And I do think that ham hock really helps.
Yeah.
So
I wonder if the modern twist on that was like, we want to make it easy for people to not have to buy a specialty thing from the butcher.
Yeah. Yeah.
Be able to make it more like pantry friendly.
It was
something.
Easier to make.
But
because,
not as good.
You have to source the ham hock. But if you have the ham hock, put it in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, like, why discourage people from using a ham hock? It's just using more parts of the animal.
Right. Right. Exactly.
I don't like that whole movement. I feel like in cookbook, there's like a movement against it of like the Allison Romans who only use whole chicken recipes, only buy whole chickens.
Right.
And like Julie Church and all those folks. And then there's like the rest of America that's like boneless, skinless chicken breasts for everything. And I'm just sick of it. Like, it's so dumb.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to my TED Talk. Oh, she also had tons of like great classic solid veggie side recipes.
Yeah. Yeah. Like our friend Emily made the charred carrots with orange and balsamic.
Yeah. Those combinations, like they just sound great.
Yeah.
And they were great.
It was great. Yeah.
But it wasn't like groundbreaking, you know?
Not mind blowing, just classic.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, I mean, maybe we shouldn't have expected to have our minds blown. Maybe
well,
we should just expected just classic.
I think because we've cooked so many recipes in so many cookbooks, we know how many great recipes are out there.
Yeah.
And I think people sort of stop here, you know?
Totally.
And there were good things in here.
Yeah, for sure.
But it wasn't. Yeah. I mean, I think of like The Flavor Equation by Nick Sharma.
Totally.
You know, if that's where I'm going when I'm like, I need some sort of like roasted carrot something, but like I'm bored with all of the like boring roasted carrot things, and like go look in there. And there's so many interesting combinations.
Right.
I'm like, oh, God, I didn't even think about pairing those together.
Yeah. If you're bored, this is not this book is not the answer for you because it could feel still boring because it's just classic.
Can I talk about a recipe that is classic that I kind of wish that I had not made?
Yes. Let's hear about it.
I made the baked rigatoni with lamb ragu.
Okay.
So this is like a baked pasta dish.
Yeah.
And it's kind of the sort of thing that I wouldn't normally make because usually they're like really dairy heavy. But I actually made this dairy free by just because of my proficient cook brain. I could look at the recipe and be like, this isn't going to ruin it by me swapping, you know, this cream out for coconut cream. And it's not going to ruin it by me topping it with a non-dairy cheese instead of the mozzarella. You know, there are recipes where like dairy is like the whole point of the recipe and then it's not going to be so good. But this was easy to make with some swaps, but it was not time friendly. The reason why I joke that it's a recipe that I wish I had not made is because it was friggin' delicious.
Okay.
I mean, it has like ground lamb in it. It has fennel, like it has all these layerings of flavor. Like there's something about like the silkiness of lamb fat that is just like so great on your tongue. Like, sorry if I'm getting like too descriptive.
No, I love lamb.
But you can taste that when you eat this dish. Yum. I mean, it just held all of those flavors together. It had some carrots too that I actually pulled from my winter garden. So it was like all of this great produce in there, also cooked down over a long period of time. So what I wish I hadn't made about the recipe is that the whole recipe from start to finish takes like 3 hours.
Oof.
And this is 3 hours for a baked pasta dish.
Yeah.
Right. So if it were 3 hours for like some braised meat dish or like in Julia Tertian's Small Victories, she has this like ribs recipe where you like slow braise it in like, I think beer maybe in the oven for like a couple hours on a really low heat. Like that's very hands off. And then you just do like a quick finish and it's like such a unique flavor because it's got this sticky gochujang sauce on it. That's so like
ribs.
So good. So this was like the payoff was great. Like it tasted really good, but it was just very classic and kind of expected and hit all of the right notes, but it took 3 hours to make.
Yeah.
And so now it's like, I know that this is the bar for like a baked, I know this recipe exists and I know how good it is and I don't want to make it again because it takes 3 hours and who has that kind of time?
Yeah.
And it's not 3 hours of like hands-off time. It's like, you know, do this for a while and then like then you walk away for 20 minutes and then come back and do this for a while. And then so it's like too much.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was delicious.
It also sounds delicious.
If you're not like me and you don't get crabby about things as easily and you have like a little bit more time where you can like chip away at this on a Sunday, like go for it.
Yeah.
I was trying to make this for my family for like a Sunday.
Yeah.
And I ran out of time and I was like, well, I guess I'm just going to make this the other half of this recipe tomorrow.
Oh my gosh. So
we had it on a Monday. It was still delicious. But yeah, it was a project. If you were making like a big family dinner for like your extended family and you wanted it to be a little bit special, like a Sunday supper, like this is a great thing to make because you're probably also going to be in the kitchen making other things to go along with it.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to spend 3 hours just in the kitchen that day.
No, that's a big time commitment.
That was a lot. Do we need a break?
I think we do need to take a break and then we'll come back and talk about a few more recipes. Dropcloth Samplers is a line of hand-drawn embroidery samplers, printed and ready for you to jump in and start stitching right away. Each pattern is hand-drawn by Rebecca Ringquist in her Portland, Oregon studio and printed for you to embroider with your own color and thread choices, like coloring book pages, but for embroidery. And with Rebecca's custom classes on Creative Bug, she can be there to guide you every step of the way. You can find Dropcloth Samplers on Instagram at dropcloth or online at dropclothsamplers.com.
Here we are. Let's talk about pizza.
I want to talk about pizza. So there's a pizza recipe in this book that I made for our cookbook club gathering that I thought was awesome. It's a Brussels sprouts pizza carbonara.
That sounds so interesting.
So it's not a difficult recipe because it calls for, in fact, when I was making it for cookbook club, I was making like three things. And then I realized I had like 20 minutes to get there and I didn't have time to make the pizza. And I got on Marco Polo and I said, you guys, I can't make the pizza. And Monica said, you can throw it in the oven here. You can do it. And so I literally threw it together in 10 minutes and like carried it across in my cast iron skillet in the back of my car and threw it into her oven. And it came out great. It calls for a store-bought pizza crust. I make my own pizza crust, so I made my own, but store-bought would be fine. So you just, you know, get your pizza dough like stretched out. And then you make a bechamel sauce, which is like a pretty simple sauce. It only takes a few minutes to come together. So it's like a white sauce.
Mm-hmm.
You take the Brussels sprouts and you sort of shred them very finely. And then you toss that with some good olive oil and you layer it with some ricotta, some pancetta, and the Brussels sprouts. So the pancetta is like super salty. The white sauce and the ricotta are very creamy. And then you get that like sort of brassica bitterness from the Brussels on top. I thought it was really delicious.
Yeah, it was delicious. It's funny, what I remember most from it was how good the crust was. Oh. But well, it was like a great creative light, but not actually light because it's like rich with the ricotta and right, the bechamel sauce. Right. But it was great.
I liked how salty it was. I thought the saltiness of the pancetta worked so well with the crispy Brussels sprouts. It just like really did it for me.
I love salty anything.
Yeah.
I think it's becoming a problem, actually. Like, do I have like a mineral, like a deficiency? Because
because you're just craving salt all the time.
Yeah.
That's funny. I highly recommend that, especially because you could do it with store-bought crust and it could be so easy.
I feel like moving. I know that Brussels sprouts are more of like a fall veg, but you still can get them like any time of year. Yeah. I feel like that pizza is a great shoulder season pizza.
Yeah.
Like before we have fresh tomatoes, it would be great like for an Easter celebration,
sure,
or some sort of like Mother's Day, you know, light lunch sort of thing.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I loved that. I would love to find an opportunity to make it again because I don't think my children will eat it.
Okay.
So I can't really make it for pizza night in my house. So it was nice to have like a group that would appreciate,
yeah,
such a thing.
I bet that you could sub other like similar veg. Like,
yeah,
you could do.
I think it's the white sauce that's the hang up in my family.
Like, oh,
everybody's
they won't
really
do.
Committed to the tomato sauce.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about dessert?
Yeah.
We've
arrived.
We've saved dessert for last this time. Not every time.
Yeah.
But we both made a couple good ones. Do you want to talk about your fantastic showstopper meringues?
Yes. The salted pistachio meringues, which are actually extremely easy, but they're wonderful. So she credits Yotam Ottolenghi with the technique, essentially. So what she does is she has you make these meringues and you just like dollop them with a spoon. So you just mix up the egg whites, you dollop them onto a baking sheet with a spoon, but she has you make them huge. Like they're really, really big.
Like almost the size of a softball.
Yes, exactly. And then you sprinkle some pistachios on top and some sea salt. And then you, you know, cook them like a meringue, which is like for 2 hours. I know you and I have made meringue recipes before where you cook them at a low heat and then you leave them in the oven for a really long time.
Mm-hmm.
You don't do that here. You don't leave them.
Okay.
So you cook them and then you pull them out. And I thought they were really good. They're supposed to be like marshmallowy on the inside and crisp on the outside. And that's pretty much how they came out, following
yeah,
the directions exactly.
I don't remember them cracking too. I think that's
no,
partly why they often recipes will have you leave them in until the oven is like back to room temperature.
Right.
Because it brings the heat down so slowly that you don't get cracking.
Yeah.
But I wonder, did she have you add anything to it? Like, was there corn syrup or something that...
No, literally all it is super fine sugar, egg whites, and vanilla.
Yeah, it was delicious. I love meringues. I'm like totally on team. I'm having a moment with meringues.
Okay, yeah.
We're having
they're
a love
awesome,
affair.
Yeah.
They're just so easy to make. They're so impressive looking. Like they're visually beautiful.
They're dairy free.
They're dairy free.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know. It just looks so fun.
I know. And they're delicious. And I thought these ones tasted very pistachio-y, even though they didn't have anything pistachio in them.
They're yeah,
literally just sprinkled on top.
Yeah, probably because you're using good pistachios.
Right.
So I feel like that's a difference in like nut quality.
Sure. Sure. Because they get kind of fragrant as they roast.
Yeah. And the oil is like...
perfumes the whole thing.
Totally.
Yeah.
Gosh, makes me want to eat a meringue.
I know. They were so good. I also made another dessert. I made the chocolate dipped brown sugar shortbread.
Oh, how'd that turn out?
It came out really great. It's just you make sort of like the shape of a ladyfinger
uh-huh,
with them. So you like kind of roll them into a little log. They were very buttery, but that's shortbread for you.
Mm-hmm.
They definitely held together just fine. And the sort of spin on it is that it's a brown sugar shortbread. So it really has like a very like brown sugary flavor. And then you just dip them in chocolate and sprinkle them with some nuts.
Hmm.
Delicious.
Sounds great.
Classic.
Way to go.
They also freeze really well.
I made the bittersweet chocolate cake.
Yeah, you did.
And I brought that to Cookbook Club because we have to have more than one dessert.
It's usually a rule.
I thought it was fine.
Yeah.
Other people thought it was better than I thought it was. I mean, it wasn't bad, but it was like, I didn't really know what was new here. Like, what was modern here?
Sure.
So the chocolate that she calls for was bittersweet chocolate. So was that the new thing, that it was like bittersweet?
Right.
Which actually is my preferred chocolate.
Right.
Maybe I'm bittersweet. Maybe that's what's happening.
You're having a realization.
Yeah, that's it. It does have 4 eggs in it, which was great because I have chickens. So I love recipes that have like lots of eggs in it. So the cake itself felt like a really great texture. It was dense. It was not flourless. It did have like a very small amount of flour in it, but because it had like so many eggs, it was like, you know, one of those nice, just dense cakes.
It rose more than you expected it to, right?
It stayed risen too. I was kind of expecting it to like puff up and then kind of sink down.
Yeah.
Because I feel like a lot of flourless cakes do that.
Yeah.
But yeah, it stayed more fluffy and it wasn't overcooked. It just didn't taste that different to me. So she gives you some suggestions for like what to serve it with. And she has some recipes in here actually for different flavored whips. So there's like a Grand Marnier pastry cream in here that would have been good, but I didn't have any Grand Marnier, so I couldn't make that. So instead she says that you could serve it with creme fraiche. And so I thought that would be a good combo. So I ended up bringing that. Like that combination of like bittersweet and creme fraiche, you know, just something that's like not gilding the lily with more like sweetness.
Yeah.
But I don't
contrast instead with a little tart.
Yeah. And it did have like a small amount of espresso powder in it. I just am not sure that I would make that again when you could make like the midnight chocolate cake from Salt Fat Acid Heat. That's
just so wonderful.
Which is like, they're both chocolate cakes. They're trying to be something different, but I don't know. That one is just such a knockout. This one was good.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to like push that out of bed. You know, you bring a bittersweet chocolate cake to some gathering or have people over for coffee and serve that for dessert. Like nobody's going to be mad about that.
Right. Totally.
I guess that's how I felt about the whole book. It was like, they were all great recipes. If you want to make have a dinner party and like make sure that it goes well and you don't surprise anybody, like just serve all these things and it would be classic and amazing. Would be
great. Yeah, exactly. Maybe the target audience is just not people like you and me who have cooked from a zillion cookbooks.
Yeah. Not that she doesn't like deserve a spot on our cookbook shelf necessarily. Right. Like I can see how there's room for classics.
Yeah.
But are we going to be making seared tuna rolls on a regular basis in our households or like serving every evening for happy hour a Bloody Mary that has a gigantic fat prawn hanging off the side of it?
Well, and I think that's the thing about this book for me is that it's very classic stuff. The way it's prepared in this sort of classic way is not the way that I eat.
Uh-huh.
From a perspective of, it's just way too heavy for one thing. But also Ina Garten is like a fancy lady who lives a fancy life. She puts crab on nachos in this book. Mm-hmm. Like there's so much lobster in this book.
Which as a crab aficionado, like why would you do that?
Right.
Put a bunch of stuff on top of it. Like then you can't appreciate the crab. Or it's the same thing with like crab, oysters, artichokes. Like to me, I have all of these like things that I love, food ingredients that I love so much that I love them too much to not appreciate them.
To like smother them with something different.
Also, I go crabbing. So maybe that's part of it is like, I know like the work that goes into getting the crab. And so like, why would you do, and I grow artichokes. Why would you do that? And then just like not appreciate all that work that you just did by not even being able to taste it.
Right. I mean, like there's like a tuna roll where you were saying like, why would you like sear tuna and then like drizzle it with mayonnaise and put it on a hot dog bun?
Yeah.
No.
I mean, that's the thing is like, I am not in Ina's income bracket.
Right.
I do not have the money for
those. I don't have lobster in my grocery budget.
No.
Yeah.
And like a special occasion, totally.
Right.
But like, these are not meals I'm going to make often because they're too expensive and they're too time consuming. Right. So it's like she is well resourced and like that means like money and time.
Yeah.
I don't have 3 hours to make lamb ragu. I wish I did. Right. Someday I will. Maybe.
Yeah.
But that's like that's a luxury thing when you have that kind of time.
And that's the whole vibe through here is this like luxury vibe. So, you know, she says anytime she calls for any kind of oil, she wants you to use a high quality oil, you know, and like she even down to the instructions, like in some of the recipes, she's like, pull out a Dutch oven, such as a Le Creuset. And you're like, well, you It doesn't matter what the brand on the Dutch oven is. Like, right. But she just lives this like luxury lifestyle.
Also, I don't have multiple Dutch ovens where I can be like, oh, this recipe I'm using the electric stove for. Like, right. I got one, lady. Right. I got one Dutch oven.
Yeah, yeah. Seriously. So, yeah, it's not sort of for the masses in that way.
I do appreciate it when she's specific about like, you know, you're going to be using such and such food ingredient, such as this brand name.
Right.
Like, I like knowing, oh, this is where I should use the flaky Malden salt, you know. But yeah, for the cooking equipment, it's like we don't all have $360 to buy a Le Creuset Dutch oven.
Right.
I mean, I think you just use the one you have.
Yeah.
Boy, that was a rant. And I guess that's what bothers me a little bit about the disconnect is like, is comfort food fancy entertaining food?
Right.
Like comfort food by its nature, isn't that the everyday stuff that we grew up with? The stuff that like our, whoever it was in our life who took care of us, they would make that for us when we were sick or when we were sad or when you came home from school and it was a hard day or like, you know, in my case, like my mom just died and someone brought me the soup and bread and it was like that was comfort food. Yeah. It was comforting me.
Totally.
And so, you know, to elevate it to this level of like bouginess is sort of like it's comfort food for her, I guess.
Right, right. It's Hampton's comfort food.
Yeah, there you go. Which is not, it's fun to cook from.
Yeah,
totally. I would, but this is not a weeknight book.
Not a weeknight book at all. I feel like it is an entertaining book specifically.
Yeah, I think it is also like if you have a healthy income, like if you're not, you know, too poor to buy meat or like just only buying pantry things that you can stretch.
Yeah.
So if you have some flexibility in your grocery budget, great choice for you.
Yeah.
I think you don't have to be an advanced cook to cook from this book too. What do you think?
Yeah, it's not complicated. And she does a good job of explaining things clearly. Her recipes are tightly written. I think it would be a good entry level cookbook.
Yeah, but I try to think like what is the age group for that entry level? Because if you're in your 20s,
you're entry level, but you can also afford lobster.
Right. I don't know.
That's a tricky Venn diagram.
Yeah. There's so many people that are going to be so mad listening to this episode. I can feel it. Because people love Ina, and I love Ina too.
But I love her personality. I just think that her cooking style doesn't mesh with my sort of everyday life.
That makes sense. That's a good way to say that.
Yeah.
Well, I'm curious. Is this a book that earns a spot on your cookbook shelf?
I don't think I'm going to keep it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just there isn't a single recipe that I feel like I can't live without. I can take that little egg yolk nugget with me.
On your journey.
Egg yolk nugget is a really gross thing to say. I'm sorry. And I can move on from the rest of it. I mean, I don't know. That Brussels sprouts pizza carbonara was really good, but I'm not going to keep it for one recipe.
Yeah, I would agree. There's not a recipe in here that I can't live without.
Yeah.
But I would be happy to come to whoever's house if that person wants to make me that lamb ragu.
Okay. Open invitation to Renee.
We sure hope you'll join us next time when we will be cooking from Persiana Every Day by Sabrina Gayor. Sarah, why did we pick this book?
Well, you found this book while you were traveling in the UK and were captivated by it. It's very beautiful. And it is sort of like everyday recipes with a Persian influence.
That should be a good one.
Yeah. Cook along with us between now and then. Just tag us on Instagram at Cookbook Club Show or send us a voice memo or a comment at cookbookclubshow@gmail.com. You can find us online at cookbookclub.show.
And remember to subscribe to our podcast so you don't miss the next one. And leaving us a review helps other home cooks find us too. Big shout out to Jenny Butler MD for the awesome 5-star review.
We appreciate that so, so much.
Can I also shout out Scott, who wrote us email?
Yes.
About how much he likes.
Scott warmed our hearts with a wonderful email.
Yeah, it was so sweet and it was so out of the blue. And he talked about how it's really helping him be re-inspired to get back in the kitchen and cook some new recipes.
Totally.
So thank you for taking the time to send that to us, because that really is like why we do this.
It makes us so happy that maybe we can like bring some cooking joy to somebody else.
Yeah. All right. We'll talk to you guys next time.
See you next time.
Bye.